Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the today we're going around the world and taking us on another magic carpet ride. Our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, coming live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania. Welcome into the show, Bob.
Hey, hello, Aaron. Yes, indeed. And there is some news happening. We got a lot to talk about today, but some events there with Clarissa Shields yesterday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. Clarissa Shields, it was at the weigh-in. And James Bash Ali, who has been a guest on the show many times, as you know, Bob.
Right.
He was up at the scale when Clarissa Shields was trying to weigh in. Apparently, Clarissa Shields' sister was there by the scale. And she had said something to Bashir, and he didn't respond at first. And then she kept saying something to him, and he put her hands up like, stop. And they got in a verbal dispute, and it led on. Security pulled them away, and they were shouting back and forth. So whatever happened, he came and sat down in front where she was getting the scale, the seats that they had set up. And him and her sister got in another exchange of verbal words, and he sat down saying he was scared. You know, that he's not scared and all that. And here, while he was sitting, to my understanding, is that somebody sucker punched him from behind and knocked him out cold, and he hit the ground and was bleeding. And it was some scene at that weigh-in, and her opponent, who she was fighting, is not fighting. The fight is off. The arena was sold out, and they did just a tremendous job of marketing Clarissa Shields in Flint, Michigan, and the people were rallying around a big homecoming for her with this big fight. And, you know, it's just amazing how something like this her trainer got injured while he was down on the ground bleeding and out cold. She just was holding him, trying to wake him up, emergency team, and he was knocked out cold, Bob.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, Ivana Habazin is the woman's name who was fighting Shields.
Yeah.
Because she was a former champ at middleweight. Yeah, this is going to be they're going to be fighting for two world titles, WBC and WBO, plus the WBC Diamond, female super welterweight belts. So
yeah,
that's what was on the line tonight.
Yeah, well, if you can recall, these two were supposed to fight back in Atlantic City, and Clarissa Shields was running on the beach or something, on the boardwalk or something, and twisted her ankle. That was August 17th,
yeah.
And the fight got canceled. you know, so it's real sad. He had to get emergency surgery. He's out of surgery, and you know, he's doing all right for right now. But you know, he's not a young man, you know, and you know,
right?
He's in his mid-60s, and to get that type of injury at this type of the game, it could be rough, you know. His jawbone and facial injury and stuff like that. So we have to keep abreast of that, what's going on with him. But it's all over the news, everywhere. And the World Boxing Review felt that we had to air that because he's been guest many times on the show. And,
right.
You know,
oh, yeah.
And in the hometown, they try to sometimes intimidate people and things like that, hoping that, you know, people get scared and fright and, you know, they don't come with their best to intimidate them. And Bashir's a true veteran, as many people know, is that, you know, he was with Manny Stewart for a long time with the Klitschko's and many other fighters. Usyk, he trained Usyk earlier. And quite of many other fighters in this era. And, you know, he's just not going to let you stand up there and try to intimidate his fighter like that or scare him or the fighter or anything like that. But he stood up for what he believed what was right at the time. And, you know, that's a promoter's job, the commission's job, to make sure that the people who are participating in an event have the security around. So, you know, sometimes, you know, different stories, two guys that are getting ready to fight, they may get into it, but you need security around it just to protect the people that are participating. So it was boxing's big night, which would have been the night on Showtime for women's boxing. And it's just a shame what happened and that it got canceled. So I don't know what they want to do.
Yeah, as far as the rest of the card. You know, the other thing was, too, that's not just Showtime, but Argentina, that Tyce Sports TV, which, you know, we talk week to week, you know, what fights they're covering. But they're up in Michigan for that fight, too. They were coming in to not just to do the Shields fight, but they also had a fighter, Fernandez, coming up from Buenos Aires, too. So it wasn't just Showtime. This is like, you know, an international night it was going to be with Argentina TV being there.
Yeah, absolutely right. So, it's really a sad thing, and the promoter, who had Baby Miller, and Baby Miller tested positive, who was supposed to fight Anthony Joshua, and he got pulled out. So, the promoter of this event, you know, he's not having too much good luck.
Yeah, Dimitri Salida. Yeah, Dimitri Salida. Who? Yeah, we know. From I met him down at the Atlantic City gig with the Clarissa Shields fight back in April. But yeah, he's had some tough luck. And we had a good card today with some of the other fighters going out. The heavyweight Jermaine Franklin, who was 19-0, he was going to be fighting in that Jericho O'Quinn, the super flyweight too. So there was he had a couple of fighters in the game tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know undefeated. And when people do selfie sacks like that, they don't know, you know, how it hurts people. You know, here you got a guy and people training up to 10 weeks for a fight, for an event. They're looking for a payday. They count on money coming in and expenses and all of that kind of stuff. And for the card to be canceled, it's just, man, it's just one huge headache for everybody. But, hey, look, we keep our prayers going for Bashir and his family, and that he has a speedy recovery, and that he's back training and working the corner, and hope this fight gets up off the ground. But, Bob, as we move on, we'll get to a little bit more of that later on, but let's take that magic carpet ride around the world. Come on, Bob, take us around the world with that magic ride.
We have another big one today. Actually, a big fight happening in Madison Square Garden, New York City, in the USA. That's going to be on DAZN. also Sky TV over there in England, where Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, he's 39-1-1, 35 knockouts. He steps in with Sergey Dilyachenko, who's 13-1 with 10 KOs. He's Ukrainian. Now he's a fan favorite living in Brooklyn. Then it also is to Daniel Jacobs, too. So this will be a good fight tonight, too, Triple G and Dilyachenko. And they're fighting for two vacant world titles, the IBF and the IBO middleweight championships. Ivan Baranchik, he's 19-1, 12 KOs, and Gabriel Bracero, 25-3-1, 6 KOs, vie for the open WBA Intercontinental Super Lightweight crown. And Ali Akhmedov, 15-0, 11 knockouts. And A.D. Hernandez, 20 wins, 7 losses, 2 draws. They fight for the WBC International Silver Super Middleweight belt. And then, you know, we were going to talk about that fight up in Flint, Michigan, but there's other things happening around the U.S., as a matter of fact, down the road from here in Hawkinson, Delaware. Lightweight Henry Lundy, he's out of Philly. He's 29-8-1. Robert Franco, 37-22-1. They duke it out at the top of the card, which also features the battle for the WBC USNBC Silver Super Middleweight crown between Roy King, 11-4-1, and Chris Thomas, 13-0-1. He fights out of Toms River, New Jersey. Middleweight Sandy Gamauer, 11-0, and Rashad Jones clash at the top in Augusta, Georgia. And in New Mexico, heavyweight Randy McCarty and Richard Vilas slug it out. Light heavies Jared Henderson and Jasper McCargo square off in Riverside, California. Out in San Juan, Puerto Rico, is Benelito Zarrilla, 12-0, versus Jesus Antonio Perez Campos, 23-3, and that's for the interim WBO-NABO super lightweight crown. Then in Montevideo, Uruguay, the battle between featherweights Jairo Marcelo Abiso and Diego Pagura ends the night. Over now to Curzley, Scotland, and the UK, Monty Overly, 9-0, Nathaniel Collins, 5-0, fight for the vacant Triple BFC Celtic featherweight crown. In Liverpool, Steve Brogan, 14-1-2, seeks the Triple BFC Central Area lightweight belt, and the 18-0 welterweight Darren Tetley is showcasing Bradford in Yorkshire. Lee Haskins, 35-4, clashes with Jordan Rodriguez as the bantamweight topper in Bristol and Avon. On the mainland, in England, France, the IBO World Female Lightweight Championship will be decided when Estelle Mosley, 5-0, trades punches with Ana Romina Cachapani, who's 13-0-1. Mika Wozmora and Francis Chaffo vie for the vacant France middleweight belt in Boston. And in Bruges, it's Sofia Kaki versus Gajiburan Ibrahimov in that middleweight feature there. Here lives Denmark, will host the clash for the open WBLU super lightweight strap between the 4-0 Oliver Molenberg and Joad Belkvetti, who's 7-0-2. A couple of venues in Nordrhein-Westfalen, Germany. First in Bochum is the Cruiserweight Showdown between Lukas Wachenski and Oliver Althoff as the headliner. And in Ubach Pallenberg, middleweights Melvin Wassing and Zamal Edi Mahute beat up. Vienna, Austria highlights the Marco Zukovic versus Ethan Orso's light heavyweight contest. Heavyweight Rabino Zezars, 12-0, 10 KOs, faces off with Fredrik Jevtic in the main event in Grotburg, Switzerland. In Milan, Italy, we have welterweight Francesco Schiattone and Jovan Gilgitti going at it, while in Tuscany, featherweights Joel Santos and Antonio Manillo do battle. The female bantamweight bout with Maria Cecchi facing Marijana Dasovic tops tonight in Lazio. And in San Gregorio, on Live in Sicily, the features of Valentina Milazzo versus Francesca Paglia, female light flyweight matchup. Katowice, Poland ends their night with Damian Stanislavski taking on fellow middleweight Andrei Kupka, and David Gurtowski is the super middleweight main attraction in Pizus. Super middleweights Max Bursak, 34-5-2, and Becca Mukulashvili tangle at the top of the bill in Brovary, Ukraine. It's 5-0 Arslan Yagrev versus the 11-3 Morris Okala in the heavyweight finale in Krimsk, Russia. Tokyo, Japan, they showcased the Super 5 showdown between the 19-0 with 14 knockouts. Ruto Nakatani and Milan Maladino, who is 37-4 with 13 KOs. There were three local titles up for grabs in Redcliffe, Queensland, Australia, with Dana Coolwell fighting Mark Snook for the open Australia-Queensland state lightweight belt. Matthew Hartman versus Grant Moore for the Australia Queensland State Middleweight Crown. And 11-2-2, Adrian Rodriguez takes on Billy Lamar, 5-1-1, for the vacant Australia Super Middleweight title. And then we go around the world, 15 countries, and lots of events happening from A to Z again. So once again, we're back around to Pottsville from around the world.
Yeah, ain't that something? Yeah, well, yeah. You know, you talk about the fight with Knight with Triple G. It's excuse me. It's real interesting. It's a real interesting fight since him and Canelo Alvarez couldn't get together. But
right.
this fight is important. Anytime you're on that level and more titles are on the line, let's see what happens. Let's see how Triple G looks. Because he's getting up there in age, and will the sign of aging we see that, or do we see him looking like Manny Pacquiao, who found the fountain of youth and came out really, really fired up and ready to go and went and captured some more titles? So, you know, there's one thing about great fighters, you know, they're going to have their moments as they get older, but somehow they, before they go sit in the rocking chair, they have some more great moments. And let's hope that we see a terrific fight there in New York, and we hope that it's crowd pleasing, you know, for the boxing fans. But this fight is real interesting to watch.
Yeah, we're talking about Derevyanchenko. He's formerly from Ukraine, but he's one of those big Brooklyn fighters now, you know, along with Big Daley Miller and some of the other fighters that we're seeing. Gawaki, the other big heavyweight, the Polish guy, they're all fighting out of Brooklyn right now. So I'm sure there's going to be a little cheering going on for Derevyanchenko as well, too. So that'll be a good night, yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there, too. Hey, you know, also, speaking about people looking old, you know, I just want to mention about Benavidez, the 22-year-old, knocking out Anthony Durrell. You know, and Durrell's 34, but he looked a lot older. You know, took down a 9th-round TKO. So that's something that you said. We talked over the course of the week about that, how sometimes, you know, a guy can just get old. and we'll see where Durrell goes from here. But, he kind of got tail-handed to him there.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, look, you know, when you got money, titles, and stuff on the line, anything can happen. You know what I mean? Guys get up, and when you're a rated fighter and you can't get up when you're fighting for the title or defend the title, what do you need in order to motivate you, Bob? You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully we see some great fights, you know, with that, what's going on tonight.
Yeah.
You know, with Triple G, his 39 win,
one
loss, one loss, 35 knockouts, and you know what? That's an amazing record. But you know, to look at the guy that he's fighting on paper with a 13-1 record, you know, having you look at that and say, wow, Triple G should just wipe him out on the box. You know what I mean? On paper. But, you know, it is for vacant titles. You know, the IBF and the IBO, you know, so, hey, it should be something great. You know, Triple G's a great fighter. And let's see, that he rises to the occasion, Bob. But let's bring our boxing historian, Henry Haskop, in. Welcome to the show, Henry.
Yeah, welcome there, guys. You know, I guess yesterday was a very sad day finding out. How you doing, Bob? Finding out about you know, our friend Bashir. You know, that's really a shame.
Yeah.
It's ironic because, you know, supposed to do a thing on Doug Carter today. And when I got to the funeral home, you know, in Cotton Funeral Home, the last time I was there for Bashir's brother. You know, we gave a bell ceremony for his brother, and you know, and I was thinking about him at that time too, and you know, but you know, it's a shame that things like that happen in boxing. You know, and, you know, boxing doesn't get a good rap a lot for a lot of people, and something like this really sets it back. The thing is that Mark Taffet, he's the manager of Caressa Shields, and you know, he's a class act. I know him very well, and you know, I mean, I just feel bad for him too. You know, that he has to go through this, and hopefully, you know, they caught the guy, and you know, they do justice. You know, put him behind bars where he really deserves to be.
Well, you know, we know in boxing, you know, camps have heated words, but most of the veteran guys are not going to cross the line like that. You know, you may have verbal words, but they're not going to cross the line. And truly, Bashir is he's a veteran. You know, he was Manny Stewart's assistant for a long time. You know, with the Klitschko
So he's really a class act too, because he asked me if if he can give a demonstration on how to glove a fighter, and you know, we took a whole bunch of guys down down Newark. I think it was Larry Hazard's combat gym that we went to, and you know, he stood there for a couple of hours trying to teach the young trainers and even the older trainers how to wrap hands the proper way. And you know, and he was telling stories about Klitschko. You know, he's supposed to need more rap than some of the other fighters, because he's a bigger man, but the rules only allow for so many yards of rapping. And it was very interesting. I mean, he was, you know, he took time out to show everybody, answer all the questions and everything like this. And, you know, he was really, really, really a gentleman. And, you know, it just saddens me that, you know, this happened to him. You know, I've seen the pictures, you know, yesterday. And, you know, it just saddens me. That's all. You know, that just happened to happen.
It's not good. Apparently, they have arrested one person, and they're looking for another person, to my understanding. But, you know, there's been some issues up there in Detroit about the commission being a little bit of, how can I say, immature with learning how. And now this is information that I know of promoters that I've been talking to that had some issues dealing with that commission there. And let's hope this young commission that's not been in boxing a long time takes the time to reach out, you know, to experienced commissions to understand the safety that's important, not only for the fighters, but for the participants that are around the fighter. How to, you know, this is a big fight, and you got to have proper security. You got to be gated off the right way, and not everybody can be licensed to just walk up to the Diaz, that. Proper credentialing has to happen, so those type of things don't happen from people that may not be a participant. You know what I mean? Things get heated in a lot of times, and they had verbal words back and forth with each other. But, you know, Bashir went in the back. They calmed down. They came back out. She said something to him again. And he said his words that he needed to say, and sat down. However, the young lady, they kept pressing it. You know, here he has up there by himself with the young lady, that a lot of times you're fighting in somebody's hometown, they try to intimidate your fighter.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yep.
And by saying things and doing things to them to try to scare. Now, what if one of them would have went up if this young lady had got in a verbal confrontation with fighters sometime do with Carisha Shields? Would they would have did that to that young lady?
Yeah.
But Bashir standing up for his fighter so she can make it to the fight. Because
yeah.
I'm pretty sure Bashir's an experienced veteran. He felt the atmosphere, what was all about. But he wasn't
yeah.
going to let them just run over top of him
no,
or
yeah.
push him around. Like he said, I'm not scared. You're not scaring.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Just
yep.
go
yep.
on, you know? Stuff like
yeah.
he's not going to be intimidated. He's a seasoned veteran, and that this is where experience commissions come in at, and it's a
well,
shame.
Yeah.
Here,
yeah,
women,
you live and learn, and I hope you know they do you know prosecute this guy because if they don't, they just slap him on the hand. It's you know what's going to happen next time? Somebody else says, well, they just slapped a hand on a guy. I said, I could do the same thing, and I'll get the same punishment. But if they know they're going to spend years behind bars for doing something like this, I think they'll think, you know, again, you know, before they do something like that.
Well look, Henry, as you know, the manager did his job up there. You know, they had a Carisha Shields Day. She's been going out in the community. They've been honoring her, giving her plaques. She's been handing stuff out. The managers did their job. The promoter did his job. The place was a sellout. They
yeah.
sold the fight out. It
yep.
was women's big night to make it shine. And it's sad when an outside source, and this is the way it normally happens, Henry, as you well know, it's somebody that ain't connected in boxing.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yep.
That brings
yeah.
a sore eye. And it's sad that it just happened to happen to experienced veteran person that's in boxing. It's a sad day. And,
yeah. Well,
and for Bash.
Let's try to change the subject. And, you know, we'll talk about a guy that passed away just a few weeks ago. His name is Doug Carter. He lived in Newark, New Jersey. He was actually born in Nashville, Tennessee, back in 1926. And, you know, then he moved to Newark about 2 or 3 years later. And, of course, around that time, you know, around 1929, you know, the Great Depression set in. And, you know, everybody was kind of looking for jobs and trying to get food on a table. And, you know, Carter's family was no different. I mean, he had like 12 siblings. You know, and his family was, you know, kind of struggling just to make ends meet. And then he became 13 years old. He actually took up the sport of boxing at the Duker's AC on Kinney Ave in Newark. And, you know, he excelled right away. I mean, he had around 40 yeah. amateur fights, won 37 of them. And then just a couple of years later, at the age of 16, you know, he turned pro. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, it seems young now, but back then, a lot of guys, you know, turned pro at the age of 15, you know, 16, you know, 17. I know even one guy that turned pro from New Jersey, turned pro at the age of 14, you know. So, but Doug Carter, he turned pro at the age of 16, and, you know, it's kind of funny because when you hear the commentators, let's say Jim Lampley or Max Kellerman or Teddy Atlas saying, no, this guy had a busy year. He fought three, maybe four times. You know, he shouldn't fight that much, you know. Well, Doug Carter fought four
right.
times, but it wasn't in a year. It wasn't even in a month. He fought four times in 10 days, you know, which is amazing.
Yeah, wow.
You know,
yeah,
and he won all four of them. It was I believe it was June 20th to June 30th. He had four bouts and he won all four. You know, that's a kind of, you know, kind of activity he had. And in the very first year, 1943, before 24 fights. That's two a mm-hmm. month. Then the next year, he slacked off a little bit. And he only had 23. You know, so, but at the end of the 2 years, he had 47 fights, and he was only 18 years old. And some of the guys he fought, I mean, were some of the top notchers. I mean, he fought a guy by the name of Tony Riccio. Tony Riccio fought Sugar Ray Robinson, and he actually beat a guy by the name of Sammy Anga, former lightweight champion of the world, who was the first guy ever to beat Willie Pep. And then he also fought Billy Graham. Billy Graham beat Sugar Ray Robinson in the amateurs and was called the uncrowned welterweight champion in the world. He was an International Boxing Hall of Famer. And, of course, Doug fought him, too. And then the other guy he fought that was really a top-notcher, the former lightweight champion of the world and one of the greatest. Well, he's always rated one of the top lightweights of all time. And, you know, he's rated maybe one of the top two or three fighters ever to come out of New Jersey, and that was Ike Williams. And Ike Williams mm-hmm. was so impressed with him that he wouldn't give Carter a return match, but he did hire him as his sparring partner. He used Carter as sparring partner for several of his championship fights. And then, you know, in 1953, Carter decided, you know, he wanted the championship, so he challenged a guy by the name of Charlie Slaughter. It was at the Laura Gardens, and it was a 12-round bout. And the referee, whose name was Joe Kukul, I know him very well, he scored the fight 12 rounds to zero in favor of Carter, and Carter won the lightweight championship of New Jersey. And then, of course, years later, in 1993, we inducted, you know, Doug into the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame. Now, he has an extraordinary life. He had four daughters. One of them is still living.
Right.
And then he had 19 grandchildren. And he had 69 wow. great-grandchildren, 45 great-great-grandchildren.
Wow.
When I was doing the eulogy, I said, that's what you call a fertile guy, you know, because a fertile family. I mean, all them people. Wow. I mean, the people that contacted me was his granddaughters, Melissa Grant and Kimberly Grant. And they contacted me about, you know, do I know anything, you know, about him or anything. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I said, yes, I know him very well. And one of them said to me, he said, do you have any pictures or anything on him? We don't have that much. So me being a historian and everything, I looked for some pictures. I found pictures in a newspaper. But then I decided,
right.
you know, I hate to say, you know, when a black person dies, let's say when a white person dies, we bury the person almost, you know, within the next couple of days. When a black person dies,
right.
it takes a couple of weeks. So I had a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
which I did was I did a lot of research. I cut out every newspaper article from every fight he had as a pro. 79
wow.
fights. I put together a book. I made like six copies. And I presented it to the family at the wake, at the funeral. And, you know, they were blown away
wow.
but with that. And, you know, I had several pictures in there when he was younger. And a picture of me, him, and I don't know if it was his daughter or his wife, accepting the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame plaque at the time. And, you know, that was,
wow.
You know, it was a nice homecoming, as most, you know, them type of funerals are, you know, a lot of singing and, you know, there was a lot of tears, of course. You know, he was 93 years old and he was married over 70 years. And you know,
wow.
if you do the math, he was born in 1926 and they said him and
uh-huh.
his wife was also born in 1926. And they said he was married in 1940. So
uh-huh.
I'm very good at math. But I had that's like 14 years old when they got married.
Yeah,
I mean, wow.
Maybe that explained all them children that he had and great grandchildren and great great grandchildren.
I know. I said, wow.
When you start young. When you start young, those things happen. But when back in the day, when people felt that they loved somebody or they made them get married fast, they weren't into sinning back then.
He might have still been in grammar school, you know.
They were teaching them fast in grammar school, so you know what I mean?
They must have taught them things that they ain't supposed to teach them. But the thing is that I heard they were a great couple together. They were like bacon and eggs. You know, they can't have one without the other. And like I said, over 70 years. She died in 4.5 years ago, you know, 2015, she passed away. And now they're together again. And, hopefully, things worked out for the family. There was quite a few people there, you know, yesterday morning. And I want to give a shout out to Steve Weisfeld, who came down from his busy schedule. He's one of the top judges in the world. He came down with me, he was up there with me right from the beginning. And Jackie Atkins, who was the president of all the amateurs in New Jersey Association of USA Boxing, and Jim Kinney, another boxing judge who judges in New York, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and New Jersey. I mean, they were the four, counting me, that stood up there while I gave, you know, the eulogy and the nine count. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to give them a shout out because it was very, very touching, and the family was very appreciative that we were there.
Yeah, and we're appreciative that we could do this for Doug and his family. You know, he's a Hall of Famer, and for you to get on the show and talk about him. But we're talking about Hall of Fames. There's some big names floating around on the ballot now for up there at the International Boxing Hall of Fame in New York. You want to go through that?
Yeah. Well,
Henry,
this year they changed the rules and everything. And one of the rules they changed that you don't have to wait 5 years anymore. Now it's only three. So we have a lot of new names on the list, and Jorge, I say Tim Bradley, who's on there, Casimar, Diego Corrales, Carl Froch, Sergio Martinez, Shane Mosley, Tarver, Vasquez, of course Juan Manuel Marquez, and we have Shane Mosley, and of course Bernard Hopkins. They're like the new ones that are coming up. And I would think Bernard Hopkins would be like the shoo-in. And I think as a voter, we can vote as much as five people, and the top three will get in. Now, if we vote, let's say, for five, and four of them get 80%, then the four will get in if they have over 80%. But that's kind of hard to do, you know, get 80% for any one guy. You know, I think Hopkins might get it, and Marquez might get it, and I think Shane Mosley might be the third guy
to go in.
Yeah. I mean, they're the top three. Of course, you got Bradley and, Arce, they're up there too. But I think Bernard Hopkins, you know, if I do a lot, in fact, I was just putting in the Ring Magazine ratings. I do every month, I get the magazine, and I have a list of all the people that were ever rated in the top 10 for Ring Magazine. And believe it or not, the top one of all time is Bernard Hopkins. He was rated like 299 months in the top 10. And Archie Moore is second. And then, of course, Shane Mosley and Marquez is right up there, I think, in the top 10 or 12, all time. So, I mean, that just shows you, you know, how good they are. Of course, then they have the women, you know, they you know, this is the first time they're having women. Of course, Ali's daughter, she's going to be up there, and Christy Martin and Ann Wolf and Richter and, you know, Mary Jo Sanders and, let's see, Laura Serrano. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And Holly
Holm.
I want
to ask you a question, Hendrick.
Yeah.
If Layla Ali gets on the ballot, she's on the ballot, I mean, to
yeah,
get voted in.
Yeah.
And Muhammad Ali's already in. Would that be the first father-daughter thing to be in the Hall of Fame up there?
I believe so. You know, as far as fighters go, it will be because you know, this is the first time they're having fighters. They do have a few you know, women in the Hall of Fame, but they weren't fighters. You know, so
right.
You know, they have father sons in there.
No father daughters, right?
No, not as fighters. I mean, like I said, this is the first time.
That would be a first. I think the Hall should go for the first. With all
his
daughters,
you know,
it's
up to the ballot committee, and you know, they have quite a few, like Christy Martin. And I think on that, we can vote as many as three, and only two get in. So that's kind of it's going to be hard. But I think the name, you know, when you you put a person on a ballot, most of the time it's name recognition. You know, if you have
correct.
The name of Ali or Fraser or Foreman or you know somebody that really sticks out. I mean, that's the people are going to look for, like Christy Martin. I mean, you know,
that's correct.
I don't think she was the best woman ever, but her name recognition. I mean, you know, when she was fighting, everybody wanted to see her fight. You know, and because she had exciting fights, and you know, she was good. You know, and
she was.
Ann,
Christy Martin deserves to be in there.
Yeah, like Ann Wolf.
Definitely, Christy
Martin. Ann Wolf is. You know, I met. In fact, the first when I took over the amateurs. About 10 years ago, the first show I ever did was down around Trenton area, and Ann Wolf. It was an all-woman show. It was the first all-woman show we had in the state of New Jersey, and it was my first show as the president. And Ann Wolf was down there with her girls, and I tell you, you look at her, she reminded me of Bo Jack. I mean, she had a look on her face, boy. You know, I didn't even want to look at her because she looked so tough. You know, I said, man, she scared the daylights out of you. You know, but she was quite a fighter. You know, she was quite a fighter. And then you got Richter. I mean, you know, it's gonna be tough. You know, to pick the first two. You know, but that's gonna be one of the big things for people. And, of course, you know, you have the old-timers. It's the same old names every year. Then you have, the observers, which is, you know, the record keepers, the historians, the photographers, and stuff like that. And, you know, Tom Hauser's up there, and Bernard Fernandez is a new one. John Shepherd, that's the guy that does Box Rec. Tim Ryan. Alex Wello, you know, and they're all, you know, on the list. Then you have the non-participants. I mean, this year you have Lou Zabella. He's a new one. Freddie Brown's a new one. Al Gavin, he's a new one. Kathy Duva. And you have Dwayne Ford. And you have the other judge, Dave Moretti. I mean, these are the new people that are on the ballot. Dan Goosen.
Yeah, when you talk about you know Freddie Brown and Chicky Ferrara back in those days, you know, Freddie Brown was, you know, and this is what happens sometimes with Hall of Fames when they go back where older guys were doing great things in their time. Newer generation forget because they don't look back that far. in history, but Freddie Brown was he was there. He was a great trainer, great cut man.
In Boston. I thought he should have been in quite a while ago. People tell me,
yes.
People say something about Freddie Brown. We put him into the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame and also the New York Boxing Hall of Fame. And people say he's not in the international. I said, no, he's not. He was a premier, like you said, a trainer and cut man for many, many years. And, he was in the corner with the Ray Arcel and Waddy Bimstein and stuff like that. And they're in there, So, and Al Gavin's another one. I mean,
Al Gavin.
World renowned cut man. So it's going to be hard again, I mean, how do you rate, say, okay, I want to, if you're comparing notes, let's say with, a promoter, a cut man, a manager, a judge, a referee, Carlos Padilla is up as a referee, ring announcer. How do you compare one with the other? You can compare fighters, but what makes a manager better than a writer or a writer better than a promoter and vice versa? I mean, you really got to look into their history and what impact they had in the sport of boxing before you actually, put the vote down, put that check mark. And in that category, I believe we could pick as many as five. And only Lou DiBella, he's another one that's nominated. I mean, it's gonna be a tough one.
A tough one. But I think for that category, Freddie Brown, when you look back in the old boxing material, he's there. And a lot of times,
no doubt about it.
Name recognition. That should be a no brainer. He was there. I mean, he's just a great person. I think he should be there. And there's other guys that aren't mentioned. You look at great matchmakers. Somebody like Al Braverman, Peyton Shear. Those guys, you look about, they work with Don King a long time. And these guys, before Don King, they were there. They matched guys and made a whole bunch of world champions when they had TV dates. And a lot of these bouts you see that were TV bouts back in the day, that these were the guys that helped put all that together. But when they die off, another generation forgets. They don't really realize because they weren't in that era.
You're 100% correct. That's what I always say. It's a mostly name recognition and what you know. Like, I've been on quite a few committees and everything, and, people say, I don't know that much about him. I said, well, you got to do your research. If the person's on the ballot, at least, today's day and age, all you got to do is, push Google. you get some of the information. Then if you dig a little further, you can get a lot more information on your own. Just do your research.
Oh, right.
And, Freddie Brown, I'm not supposed to tell you who I vote for, I guess, but, he got one of my votes. I mean, I'll tell you that much. He was even a trainer of a friend of mine, Irish Pat Murphy, who still lives in Sea Caucus, and he comes to our meetings all the time.
Pat.
And he always talks about, Freddie Brown. But that's not the reason why I'm going to put my check mark down next to him. It's just that he has the history behind him. And, he's the old.
Great history. When you talk about Chicky Ferrara, Freddie Brown, Chicky Ferrara, Ray Arcel, those names, you're talking great people. that did great things in the sport of boxing.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
and especially
yeah.
in New York. You know, I think for me, that's a no-brainer. If they look anywhere in history with great fighters, great trainers in New York City with the Garden and all of that, Ray Arcel, Freddie Brown, Tiki Ferreira, all of them guys, their names just click, you know.
Yeah.
Al Galvin. Their names are there, man, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Al Galvin.
I think that.
Now, the thing is that with Al Galvin, are they going to, you know, a lot of people will say, well, I want to pick one referee, maybe one cut man, one manager, one trainer. Are they going to, you know, is Al Galvin's name going to go up against Freddie Brown's? You know, maybe the average voter might say, well, I don't want to put two cut men in, but I'll pick a referee and, you know, a cut man and maybe a trainer or a promoter or a manager.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, I don't know. But it has been done in the past because I remember a few years ago the announcers, Farhood and Tompkins, got in the same year. And, you know, they were together all the time. And they got in. So it's not impossible. But you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. We're supposed to get our ballots in by the end of the month, and I believe they make the announcement sometime in December on who actually goes in the Hall of Fame. You have two judges, Dwayne Ford and Dave Moretti. Now, they're both, you know, world-class judges for many, many years in Las Vegas. And, you know, I don't know, you know, if they go – you know, the voters were going to pick both of them. They might just say, well, we're going to pick just one, you know, one judge and maybe, you know, Freddie Brown. You know what I mean? You know, it's
right.
Like I said, it's so hard to pick a judge, you know, a trainer, a cut man,
mm-hmm.
a manager, you know, referee, administrator. I mean, you know, against each other. How do you rate that? You know, how do you, who's better? You know, who deserves it more? That's where you got to really
knuckle
down.
And Bob, any questions for Henry about anything?
No, you guys are sounding great. I love hearing you guys when you talk history. But I just want to point out, like Henry said, the announcement is going to be made in early December, and then we're looking at June 14th of 2020 for the induction ceremony up in New York. I just wanted to add that.
We have something else, and you know, June's a little bit far away. But look, our man, the president of the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame, is right here, and I'm going to put him on the spot. And and he's president of the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame. He's a historian. But, Henry, you got to talk about the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame. And, I want to thank you because I was inducted in there. But what's coming up? When's the dinner and all of that, man?
Well, the dinners are going to be on November 14th at the Venetian in Garfield again. I mean, it's, you know, it's a great place. I mean, like you said, the food keeps on coming. And, you know, last couple of years we've been having outstanding attendance. You know, the attendance has been over 500, even 650, you know. And I guess the biggest name right now is probably our boxer of the year, pro boxer of the year, and that's Shakur Stevenson. He's going to be, you know, as our pro boxer of the year. The people that are going into the Hall of Fame is, of course, Larry Hazard Jr., that's the commissioner's son. And you got Nelson Cuevas, Tom Cassino. Tom Cassino's on the ballot for the International Hall of Fame as a photographer, and he's on our list.
Flat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mike Barreiro.
Tom Cassino. I like to talk to Tom because Tom, man, I know he has some pictures that are second to none. He was a photographer so long with Showtime and HBO and when he worked independent.
Yeah.
Well, you always seen Tom at the fights flashing. You know, he'd get you next day. He'll show you. He'll hand you a couple pictures. Say, "Oh, Tom, I didn't know you were taking his hair. Take it, Tom. What a great guy."
Oh yeah.
Then
you got Mike
Lareo.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. Maybe we can corral him. And you got Mike Lareo,
yeah.
And then Vinny D'Amata, and then you got Lawrence Layton, Santos Lopez, Jamil McLean is going in, and you got Reyes Muniz and Carl Ressis and Peter Wood, the writer, and posthumously we got Greg Torres and Lenny Hendrickson and Mike Hall, the trainer from Atlantic City. He's going to go in. And, you know, we have, of course, our official of the year and our amateurs. And man of the year is Jim Kinney. He's one of the guys that came yesterday morning for Doug's funeral. So, I mean, like I said, it's a great affair. We don't charge that much. We charge around $90 a head. And, all the food you can eat, and
let me tell you, that $90 a head, once that food starts rolling, it feels like a $300-$400 meal. Cause I didn't believe me at first. I said Henry's trying to pull a wool over our eyes, and all the guys that were with us said, I don't think it's going to be like that, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, when it starts
the thing
coming,
is that most people say,
coming.
You know, about the
it
price.
It was gourmet
yeah.
food, baby.
Yeah, most
yeah.
people say about the price. Oh, it's so much
off,
money. But... You know, so much money. And then and when they get there, he says, "How can you do this so cheap?" You know, because
yeah,
they have, you know, everything coming out. Just the lamb alone.
Man, the shrimp. Yeah, just lamb alone. And then you got shrimp, all kind of style. You got Alfredo fettuccine. You got pastas, meatball. You got all of this. I mean, hors d'oeuvres. You have calamari. Oh, man, everything. It just keeps coming and coming. So no sooner you think that they're finished serving the food, right?
Yeah.
They hit you with all these different type of desserts. They just pile these desserts on you. Then the next thing you know, they're feeding you coffee. And next thing you know, here comes the ice cream, and they're back on serving some more hors d'oeuvres.
Well, the Venetian and Garfield, they do a great job. And, you know, years ago, it used to be called a cameo, and my wife and I actually got married there, and you know, the owner of the place.
Is that what you're
not
marrying him?
No kidding. Wow. Okay.
the owner of the place, you know, called me in the room, and he says, "He says, here, just between us, this is how much it's going to cost." And he gave it to me at cost, you know, whatever it cost them. He gave me, you know, when I married Joyce over 30 years ago. So it was, you know, I feel, you know, that's the place to be. We have in our, you know, award ceremonies there, you know, just about every year, and for the last maybe 25 years. So it's really a great place.
And trust me, the boxing aficionados are there, the IBF, the WBC, WBA, I mean the NABF. Everybody here, the New York Boxing Commission, the New Jersey Commission, I mean, champions and former contenders. So let me tell you, you know, June is June, but in November, man, you got to be there because all of us are going to be there chowing it down. But if, you know, if you want to buy tickets, You have a website, right, Henry?
Online? You can go on a website. You can email me. You know, it's hhaskup@yahoo.com, and I can give you all the information. And also, Ring 8 is going to have theirs. And they called me up yesterday. They want to invite you guys to the Ring 8 dinner. and they wanted to know if you could bring that Jack Johnson exhibit, and they'll give you a stipend for bringing it.
All right. We're going to try to make it.
I'll have them call you. I'll have them call you guys and set something up.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much, Henry. We like to thank everybody, and our prayers are out for Bashir Ali. Our prayers for the family, for Doug Carter. And also, please say your prayer for each and every one of us to keep us safe, and God keep guiding us in the right direction. Try to keep us humble. Try to keep us prosperous. You know, and we thank God for all that he does. And I want to thank God for these two gentlemen. Bob Murray, who always takes us on a great magic carpet ride around the world. And our boxing historian, Henry Hascop. Man, you two are a true blessing. Stay tuned next week, same time.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, yeah.
All right. Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.